Daf Kufvav. Ksubas. Eliyahu Anavi used to come to visit Rav Anan till a particular maisa happened with Dayanus, and then Eliyahu Anavi stopped coming. The Gemara says Rav Yosef refrained from being espal to Hashem during an Eish Tzara. He didn't want to bother him, similar to how Elisha handled a particular situation. When the main body of Rabbanim left Rav, there were 1,200 Talmidim. When they left Rav Huna, there were 800. When they left Rav Papa, there were 200. There were numerous people, the Gemara says, who took their schar from the Trumas Halishka. For example, people who corrected Sifrei Torah in Yerushalayim, and the women who weaved the Pareichas. Also, the Beis Haftinis took their schar from the Trumas Halishka. The Beis Haftinis were the ones who knew the secret recipe. It was the family that had the secret recipe for the Keteris in the Beis Hamikdash. There were 13 Pareichasin in the Bayis Sheni, one in each of the seven gates of the Beis Hamikdash, one from the Pesach HaHechel, one from the Pesach HaUlam, plus four more. The women who raised children from the purpose of repairing the Parah Aduma were paid from the Trumas Halishka. These children were watched very, very carefully so as never to become tumate, never to become in contact with Tuma, so they would be capable of preparing the Parah Aduma. The Trumas Halishka was the money collected from everyone's Machzis HaShekel contribution used for counting of the population. Three times per year, money was taken from the big Lishka to fund the Trumas Halishka. Certain kelim were also made with money from the Trumas Halishka. According to Rabbi Shmuel, it was okay for Hektish to sell Meiser Paris at a profit in order to make some extra money. According to Rabbi Akiva, we never use money designated for Hektish or for Aniyim to try to make money via using them for investment purposes. Daf Kuf Zayin. A man who went to Medinas Hayam, Rav says Bezdin takes Nechasim to give Mezainis to his wife. According to Shmuel, they don't do this. If he goes to Medinas Hayam, and she wants Bezdin to be Tevea, some Mezainis from his property, he can come back and say, Tzi'i Maisi Adecha b'Mezainisecha, let you simply keep your Maisi Adayim and feed yourself. If it does end up that Bezdin does take property from him to pay for Mezainis, the Mezainis would only be for the wife, not for the children. The Gemara says, for a man that went overseas, if we're chayshish that he died, we can rely on a testimony of only one witness. We know normally we need two witnesses, but for the case of this, we're mekel, and we say one witness is enough to say that he died, because we say mishum iguna hikilu beirabanan. We don't want her to be an aguna for the rest of her life. Therefore, we're mekel in this particular situation. A yavama cannot take a yavan or do chalitza until waiting at least 3 months after the death of the brother. But she must receive mezainis from the estate during this time. The Yavam, by the way, is supposed to ask Bezdin advice on whether he should do Yibam or Chalitza. The Gemara says if a Katana is married off by her mother or her brother, when she becomes a Gedayla, at that point, she does Mian, if she does Mian, and she refuses to live with him, her husband is Pater for mezainis, and if the husband goes to Medinas Hayam and she requests mezainis and then does Mian, she may have to pay it back in back payments to what she had gotten from the property. The halacha goes according to Rav Huna Amar Rav, and Rav Zvid, that Bezdin does give mezainis to his wife when he's in Medinas Hayam, that a woman can tell her husband, I don't want your mezainis, therefore I won't give up my Maisi Adayim. And although a klicheres cannot be kashered, but a glazed klicheres can be kashered for Pesach, if it was used for chametz during the rest of the year. Mishnah. If stam a person helped a woman support herself when her husband went to Medinas Hayam, Chanan says he loses his money. It's like Mavriach Ari Minichse Chavera. You save your friend's property from a lion, so you can't then come to him later on and say, you know, I saved your property, therefore I want you to pay me for it. The Bnei Kahanim say that he swears as to how much he gave her, and then they must pay him back. Daf Kuf Ches, the Gemara. If Reuven makes a neder not to have any hana from his friend Shimon, he's still allowed to pay his Machzis HaShekel, pay up his loan, or return a lost object to him. Machzis HaShekel is okay to pay since a shekel is a mitzvah, which the money is used for to pay for karbanis. And he can return an aveda since there's a mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, so there's really no hana that he's getting from Shimon. The Gemara cites a Mishnah which says that if one makes a neder not to give hana to his friend, he's still permitted to return his friend's lost object, his aveda, as we just mentioned. The Gemara explains the reason that's okay is since returning an aveda is a mitzvah, and it's not considered hana, therefore it's mutter. The Rishonim note that the Gemara in Nedarim, Daf Mem Gimel, implies that one who makes a neder not to give hana to his friend is not allowed to give his friend tzedakah. The Rishayim ask, this is contradictory to our Gemara, which states that performance of a mitzvah is not considered hana. Rabbeinu Yoina, brought in the Shita Mekubetzas, answers that there's a difference between the mitzvah of giving tzedakah and the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. The mitzvah of tzedakah does not require him to give tzedakah to the one whom he vowed not to benefit. He could fulfill this mitzvah by giving tzedakah to other poor people. Therefore, the fact that he decided to give this particular man tzedakah is considered a hana. The mitzvah of returning lost property, Hashavas Aveda, can only be fulfilled by returning it to its owner. You can't do the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda by giving it back to somebody else. Therefore, it's not considered a hana. The Rashba in the Darim, Daf Lamed Daled, gives a different explanation. He explains that when one returns lost property, he is merely giving the owner an item that always belonged to him. Therefore, when one receives a lost item, the only benefit he receives from the one who returned it is at the time of the return. That's where the benefit is. Afterwards, use of the item subsequently is not hana from the one who returned it, because he's using the item that always belonged to him. The act of returning, however, is not considered hana because it's a mitzvah, and therefore it's mutter. When one gives tzedakah, however, he gives the recipient an actual financial gain. The recipient's subsequent use of the tzedakah is considered direct hana from the person who gave it to him. Therefore, although the act of giving tzedakah is a mitzvah, and is therefore not considered a hana, it's still forbidden to give tzedakah, because subsequent use later on, that's considered hana. Finally, the Gemara says if someone repaid someone else's loan, the favor does not have to be repaid. The Mishnah. We know Admin said seven things. One who died leaving sons and daughters. The sons get the Yerusha, and the daughters get to get Mizainus from the Yerusha. But if the estate is limited in size, then the priority becomes to give the daughters Mizainus, and the sons, Nebuch, need to collect tzedakah to support themselves, since it's not proper to make daughters go out and beg. So that becomes the priority, to take care of them first. So Admin asks, why should the sons lose out? So why are the daughters better than the sons? Rabban Gamliel comes to argue with Admin. The halacha is like the Tanakhama. The Gemara. A man has more rights here in this case because he has a requirement to sit and learn Torah. Of course, unless the case is a case where there's just enough for one person to get it, then of course it goes to the daughters because it would be embarrassing for them to have to collect tzedakah. The Mishnah. If Reuven tells Shimon that he, Shimon, owes him jars of oil, but Shimon says, I only owe you oil, in other words, he's maida b'miktzas, according to Admin, he must swear. According to Chachamim, he's pater from Shvuah, since this is not really maida b'miktzas, it's really two different things. It's jars and it's oil. That's two separate things. And you can't have maida b'miktzas on two separate things. Rabbi Gamliel says we paskin like Admin. And the Gemara says, if a person claims shemen, but not jars, then he's not considered maida b'miktzas. Because to the oil, he is fully maida. But to the jars, he claims that he owes nothing. Daf Kuf Tes, the Mishnah. If a man promised his prospective son-in-law a certain sum of money, and then he backed out of it, he just couldn't pay it, so the daughter should remain single until he comes and pays up. Admin said, why should she suffer? She didn't do anything wrong. It was her father that made the promise. So either he should marry her, or he should just back out of the marriage, decide one way or the other. Rabbi Gamliel says, I agree with Admin. And the Gemara says, Rabbi Yitzchak said that any time Rabbi Gamliel comes along and says he agrees with Admin, we paskin like that psak. Rabbi Zeira says, the two halachas that Hanan said, we paskin like, but the seven halachas of Admin, we don't paskin like all of them. We only paskin like the first three, which Rabban Gamliel agreed with. According to the Ramah, if a man was promised a dowry before marriage, to be received after marriage, if the father-in-law doesn't have the promised money and cannot pay it, then the chassan can back out of the marriage. But once the marriage takes place already, and then he can't pay it, then he's not allowed to back out anymore, because once the chassan marries her, it implies that he was meichel the nedunya. The Mishnah. One who claims a certain field is his, but he had also signed somewhere that the field belonged to someone else, according to Admin, he can still make a claim. But according to the Chacham, he can't. Since once he signed a shtar that implies that there's a different owner, that's it. He can't be in both places at the same time. The Gemara. The only time he cannot claim on the shtar is if he signed the shtar as an aid. But if he was a dayan on the shtar, or he just testified on the signatures of the shtar, then he doesn't lose the right to claim the field for himself. If a person says, the field was originally someone else's, but now it's mine, according to Rashi, he can claim it's his, and we'll believe him, since we say, ha-pesha asar, hu-ha-pesha hiter. He was the one that first made the first claim, therefore he can come and make this claim also. The Rishonim have a problem with this Rashi, since his new claim that it's his wasn't done toich chidei dibur to his original revelation. And the Pesha Asar, Hu HaPesha Yitzer, only works in that type of a situation where it was done toich chidei dibur. So Rishonim answer that tak in this situation, it was a case of toich chidei dibur. The Mishnah. If someone went to Medinas Hayam and he forgot the road that he owns that will take him to the field that he owns, Admin says we give him the shortest route. We give him a present of the shortest route. But according to the Chachamim, he must buy a new path to get to his field, or he has to fly over all the other fields somehow to get to his field. And the Gemara says, the Mishnah is referring to a case where the four surrounding fields had been owned by four different people, and one person bought all of them up. Daf Kuf Yud, the Mishnah. Reuven produces a shtar and says that Shimon owes me money. And Shimon says, I owe you nothing. The shtar is either false, it's mezuyif, or I paid you already. And in the interim, while all this was going on, Reuven had sold Shimon a separate field. So Admin says, we believe Shimon. Since Shimon can taina, if I really owned Reuven money, why would Reuven have sold me another field? The Chachamim say, we believe Reuven since he has the shtar. The Gemara. Shimon has a good taina, according to Admin, since if Shimon owed Reuven money, Reuven would have taken the money from the sale of the new field and not given Shimon this new field. He would have taken this payment for the old loan when she owned him. Therefore, it's a proof that this really never happened, and really there is no owing of any money. This machlokes, the Gemara says, is only if the shtar was written for the new field and then the money was given. But if the money was given first, I'll agree that Shimon has a good taina. The Mishnah. If two people owe each other money of equal value, Admin says the two cancel each other out. Why bother making a transaction? If you owe me $100 and I owe you $100, then they both cancel each other out. The Chachamim say they actually have to go through the process of exchanging. I give you the bag of money, you give me your bag of money, to pay each other back. And the Gemara says, damages, we know, are always paid from Idis. Chayvis are always paid from Beinonis. Ksubis are always paid from Ziburis, the poorest quality. By a chayv, the question is, whose Beinonis do we evaluate in terms of what kind of field to pay back? We know that a Baal Chayv has to pay for Beinonis. How do we determine what's called Beinonis? What kind of Beinonis do we actually go by? Reb Nachman says, we go by what the Loiva owns. So we take a Beinonis, a field, a typical field that the Loiva has, and that becomes the Beinonis. B'shalai hein shaman. We look at his fields and the value of what his Beinonis is. Reb Sheitsha says, we don't look at his, but we look at typical fields in general. We say b'shal adam hein shaman. We look at the value of a typical Beinonis, average field that people in general own, and that's the type of Beinonis field he has to pay back. The Mishnah. Eretz Yisrael is divided into three parts, vis-a-vis marriage. Eivre Yarden, Galil, and Yehuda. If you marry a woman in one region, you can't force her to move to another region. Within one region, however, you can force her to move from one town to another. The Gemara. You cannot force her to move from a krach, from a big city, to an ir, to a small city, since the big city has a lot of shopping versus the small city. It's better to be in a big city, so to push her out into a small city, she won't have all the shopping and all the food that she needs to buy. In fact, you can't force a woman to move from a small town to a big town either, since we paskin like Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Chanina, that a small city also has a lot of benefits, and the fact that a small city has a lot of space. Now she'll be moving to a big city where the cities are very crowded, and that's to her disadvantage. So basically what it comes out is a big city has some milas and some chesreinus, and a small city has some milas and some chesreinus. Finally, we say that Shmuel says any change from any town to another is very difficult for a person to get used to, since the food changes, so a person will have stomach trouble. But we do say that poor people always have stomach trouble, since they never have enough to eat in the first place. The Mishnah. A person can compel his entire household to move to Eretz Yisrael. He can also compel his whole family to move from Stama city in Eretz Yisrael to Yerushalayim. The Ritva adds that this even applies la'achar ha'churban, since there is still a concept of chibas Eretz Yisrael. But he only has the right to force them if he's going lishma, to be mekayim the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. One caveat, however, if there's a sakana in going or being in Eretz Yisrael, the mishpacha then can refuse to go if they don't want to go. And the Mishnah continues, while he can force them all to go to Eretz Yisrael, he cannot force them to leave Eretz Yisrael. Also, not only can a man force his wife to move to Eretz Yisrael, but a wife can force her husband to move there if she wants to go there. And the Gemara says, you can force the family to move from Stama town in Eretz Yisrael to Yerushalayim, even if you're going from a Neve Hayafa to a Neve Hara. You're going from a nice country house to a small, not-so-nice house in Yerushalayim. The Gemara says if he wants to make Aliyah Eretz Yisrael and she refuses, he can divorce her, and she'll be Teitzei B'lai K'suba. But if she wants to go to Eretz Yisrael and he doesn't, she can go to Eretz Yisrael and she can also go and divorce him, but in that case, she does get her ksuba. According to Rava, the halacha ksuba is a halacha midarabanan, but according to Rav Shimon ben Gamaliel, ksuba is midaraisa. As we mentioned before, the Mishnah says that one can force his entire mishpacha to move to Eretz Yisrael. Similarly, one already living in Eretz Yisrael can force his mishpacha to relocate to Yerushalayim. The Gemara cites a braisa, which says that if a husband wishes to emigrate to Eretz Yisrael and the wife refuses to go along, she forfeits her ksuba. There's a discussion amongst the Paiskim as to the obligation to live in Eretz Yisrael, Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. The Ramban enumerates living in Eretz Yisrael as a mitzvah derived from the pasuk in Bamidbar, Perek Lamed Gimel, pasuk Nun Gimel, by Rashtam as Haaretz v'yishavtem ba. You should inherit Eretz Yisrael and you should live in it. He says that all the great milas extended to living in Eretz Yisrael, that the Gemara states that he who lives in Golos is compared to one who worships idols. That's all based on this particular mitzvah's asay in the Ramban. This indicates, says the Ramban, that this mitzvah is applicable for all times, even in times of Golos, i.e. today. Taisvis, however, says that in our times, this halacha is not applicable for two reasons. Number one, the dangers of traveling to Eretz Yisrael, sakanas durachim, therefore there is no chiyuv today to move to Eretz Yisrael. Rabbeinu Chaim, he says that nowadays there's no mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael because living in Eretz Yisrael dictates certain mitzvahs and restrictions which cannot be kept properly today. Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, explains that most Paiskim are of the opinion that living in Eretz Yisrael today is a mitzvah. However, this mitzvah is not a chiyuv, as for example the mitzvah of tzitzis. In regard to tzitzis, it's also to wear a four-cornered beged without the tzitzis, so as not to transgress the mitzvah of tzitzis. In regard to the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, however, although one fulfills a mitzvah by living there, one does not transgress a lav if he lives in Chutz La'aretz. The only prohibition we do find in regard for people who already dwell in Eretz Yisrael, the Rabbanan, based on the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, prohibited one who lives there from leaving, except for circumstances where he's permitted to leave. In closing, Rav Moshe says, since this mitzvah is not a mitzvah chiyuvis, an obligatory mitzvah, rather one that gets a mitzvah if he fulfills it, one should consider the likely problems that Rabbeinu Chaim raises and should not relocate unless he can properly fulfill the mitzvahs that are applicable in Eretz Yisrael. There's another important consideration one has to bear in mind before emigrating to Eretz Yisrael. The Pischei Tshuva cites in the Sefer Me'il Tzedakah, one who does not have an established source of income, enough to sustain himself and his family berevach, has no right to emigrate to Eretz Yisrael. Having no source of income can cause a person, Rachmana Litzlan, to stray from the right path. It's customary, says the Me'il Tzedakah, not to emigrate while one has young children. This is due to the difficulty of providing proper financial support, which can have a very negative effect on young children. Furthermore, adds the Me'il Tzedek, a person who goes to Eretz Yisrael and will therefore have to rely on tzedakah for his sustenance, while had he remained in Chutz La'aretz, he would have had wherewithal to support himself, is also not doing the proper thing by emigrating. Along these lines, Chazal tell us in regard to the mitzvah of Einik Shabbos, Asei Shabbat Chachol, V'al Tetzarech Labrius. It's better for one to forego even his basic Shabbos needs so as not have to rely on the help of others. Tana Rabbanan, Li'olam Yidar Adam B'Eretz Yisrael. A person should always live in Eretz Yisrael, even in a city in Eretz Yisrael that's mostly Goyim. But he shouldn't live in Chutz La'aretz, even if he's zeicha to live in a city that's rov Jews. In other words, it's always better to live in Eretz Yisrael. Since anyone who lives in Eretz Yisrael, it's like he has HaKadosh Baruch Hu, i.e. he has connections with HaKadosh Baruch Hu because he's so close to him. But if one lives in Chutz La'aretz, it's like being together with Avodah Zarah. And finally, Rabbi Yehuda said, anyone who is oila from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael is over on an assay, since it wasn't the right time at that time to be oila. Daf Kuf Yud Aleph. There are three Shavuos oaths that are brought down in Shir HaShirim. Number one, that Jews shouldn't all go up together to Eretz Yisrael all at once as a wall. Number two, that they shouldn't rebel against all of the nations of the world. And number three, the nations shouldn't put excessive pressure on Klal Yisrael. And then there were also three more Shavuos. Number one, the Nevi'im should not reveal when the Ketz will be. Number two, they shouldn't do too many averis to push away the time of Mashiach, i.e. Klal Yisrael shouldn't. And number three, we shouldn't reveal the secrets of Torah to the Goyim. Rebbe Lazar says, anyone who lives in Eretz Yisrael is resting without sin. One who is buried there has a very big schus. It's as if he is buried underneath the Mizbeach. The same way it's usur to leave Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laretz, it's usur to leave Bavel to go to other lands, due to the fact that the Torah existed in Bavel. But if one lives in Bavel, it's like living in Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara says the Mesim buried in Chutz Laretz will not become alive during Tchias HaMesim. Only those buried in Eretz Yisrael will become alive. Others say, even those in Chutz Laretz will be zeicha to the nes of Tchias HaMesim, but only via Gilgal. Their bones will first have to roll to Eretz Yisrael. There will be special tunnels from Chutz Laretz for the bones to roll on their way to Eretz Yisrael. It's for this reason that Yaakov Avinu made Yosef promise that he would bury him in Eretz Yisrael, so his bones would not have to roll to Eretz Yisrael. Rashi over there in Chumash also brings down another reason that Yaakov Avinu wanted his bones to be moved to Eretz Yisrael, so that the Mitzrayim should not worship him after he died and make him into an Avodah Zarah. The Pasuk V'ruach LaHalchem Ba, we learn about anyone who walks four Amos in Eretz Yisrael, will be guaranteed to be a Ben Olam Haba. The Gemara says too much sitting is bad for one's stomach. Therefore, a person should spend one-third of his time sitting, one-third of his time standing, and one-third of his time walking. The Amei Haaretz will not be zeicha to Tchias HaMesim. But if they help to support Talmidei Chachamim, they will be zeicha in Tchias HaMesim, since the Pasuk says, V'atem hadveikim b'Hashem Elokeichem, chayim kulchem hayoim. Any person who marries off his daughter to a Talmud Chacham, or helps a Talmud Chacham invest his money, so he'll have money to be able to sit and learn Torah, or if he helps support Talmidei Chachamim, it's like he's medavek b'shechina, and he'll also be zeicha in Tchias HaMesim. The Gemara says in the future, Talmidei Chachamim will be able to stand up with their actual clothing, and Eretz Yisrael will give out tremendous abundance of food and fruits. In the time of Mashiach, there won't be a grapevine that won't be so abundant that it'll need a whole city to prune it. Rabbi Yochanan says a person who shows the white of his teeth by way of a smile, i.e. he smiles and he's happy, therefore you can see the whites of his teeth, that's more of a chesed that he is doing than if he gives another person white milk. And finally, the Gemara says Eretz Yisrael is so abundant with good things that it's an Eretz Zavas Cholav Udavash. Daf Kuf Yud Beis. The peaches of Eretz Yisrael were so big that Rav Chelbai was able to share just one of them with many people and animals. The rockiest part of Eretz Yisrael, the Gemara says, is Chevron. That's where they buried all the dead people. And we know Maras HaMachpelas in Chevron. And even though it was the least fertile part of Eretz Yisrael, it still produced fruits that were seven times as much as any area of Chutz Laretz. In fact, all the land in Eretz Yisrael is fertile, very, very much fertile, as we see from Bereishis. Vayizra Yitzchak ba'aretz ahi, vayimtza bashana ahi, mea sha'arim. He found 100-fold what was planted. A little bit of trivia, the name of the neighborhood in Yerushalayim, mea sha'arim, comes from this pasuk. In the year, I think it was 1882 or something like that, when they dedicated the little village outside of the old city of Yerushalayim, and they made this new neighborhood called Mea Sharim, was the Shabbos of Parshas Toldos, and therefore, based on this pasuk of the abundance of what Yitzchak had planted, the words Mea Sharim, the neighborhood was named Mea Sharim. The Gemara says Eretz Yisrael is like a tzvi, a deer, which moves very fast, therefore Eretz Yisrael produces very quickly. It is also fatter than milk and sweeter than honey. Reb Zera was very hasty to get to Eretz Yisrael, since he was afraid that maybe he would not be zeicha to enter Eretz Yisrael, like Moshe and Aaron were not zeicha. Reb Abba used to kiss the stones of Akko. Reb Chanina would fix the roads of Eretz Yisrael. Reb Chiya used to roll in the dust. All of these actions were out of Ahavas Eretz Yisrael, and to show people what the chashivas of Eretz Yisrael was. Reb Yirmiya bar Abba said, the generation that Ben David will come, i.e. Zman HaMashiach, there will be persecutions and prosecutions of Talmidei Chachamim. 9 chalakim of them will be lost, and only 1/10 will be left. There will be many hard times during that period. And finally, the Masechta ends with a Memra from Reb Chiya Barashi Amar Rav, that in the future all the Peiros of Eretz Yisrael will bear fruit, as we see from the Pasuk in Yoel, Ki Eitz Nosa Piryei, Te'ena V'Gefen Nosnu Chelam. Even the wild trees will bear fruit, and they will be able to yield their strength. The Marsha explains that these trees, when this happens, this will be a siman that Mashiach is coming. We see here that the Gemara concludes this Masechta with a statement concerning the miracles that will occur in the Yemais HaMashiach, the Messianic era. The Gemara says that at that time all barren trees in Eretz Yisrael will produce fruit. Tosfos comments that this statement seems to be out of place, as the Gemara immediately preceding it is not discussing the miracles of Yemais HaMashiach. Tosfos explains that it was placed here, however, in order to end the Masechta on a positive note. The Ben Yehoyada explains a deeper meaning of the Gemara's apparently simple statement. He says that Jews who are ignorant of the Torah are compared to barren trees. A Talmud Chacham, however, is compared to a fruit-bearing tree. Thus, the Gemara's statement that in the Yemei HaMashiach, barren trees will produce fruit should be taken metaphorically, to mean that there will be no more ignorance then, as everyone, including the ignorant, will be thoroughly versed in Torah. According to the Ben Yehoyada's interpretation, we can perhaps explain the connection this statement has with the statements preceding it. Immediately prior to this statement, the Gemara discusses the tribulations that Torah scholars will undergo in the generation preceding the Yemei HaMashiach. With this statement, the Gemara shows the contrast between the harsh period and the glorious era of Yemei HaMashiach. In the era of Yemei HaMashiach, not only will Torah scholars, Talmidei Chachamim, be able to pursue their studies unhindered, but even ignorant people will blossom into full-fledged Torah scholars. Hadron Alach Masechtos Ksubos. We'll close this Masechta by saying that we should all be Zeicha to the Bias Gael Tzedek, Bimheira V'Yameinu.